I like to look beautiful and do ugly and stupid things on stage. So that like dichotomy is really fun.
From Louisville Public Media, this is Five Things, the show that tells a life story through the objects we treasure. I'm Tara Anderson. Today's guest has two personalities in a way. In daily life, he's Samuel Penn, 26 years old, grew up in Frankfort, Kentucky, then moved to New York City. He's also a drag queen named Gilda Wabbit, with huge hair, long fingernails, a big voice, and a pretty filthy mouth. If you look her up on YouTube, don't watch with children around. Trust me. As it happens, Sam graduated from the University of Kentucky's voice program, where I also went to school. So we know a lot of people in common. I was in New York City last May to do some interviews, and Sam welcomed me to his apartment in Astoria, Queens, on a rainy afternoon.
Hi, hello. My name is Samuel Penn, but you would probably know me best as Gilda Wabbit because I am a drag queen living in New York City, and I was also the star of the meme The Future Liberals Want.
Tell people about this photo.
So there is a picture of me in a turquoise costume and an orange wig and tennis shoes with bags between my legs. And I'm angrily texting my co-host of the show that I was going to because she was running late. And next to me is this woman in a niqab. Now, for your audience, a niqab is a specific style of modesty garb, usually associated with Islam. Mm-hmm. So she's covered from head to toe in black with just a slit for her eyes open. And you can sort of see she's like glancing a little bit towards me mm-hmm. in the picture. And it was taken by a Ghanaian immigrant named Buba Berry. So you have a Ghanaian immigrant photographer, a woman who we're assuming practices Islam, and a drag queen from Kentucky on a New York City subway. And it really went viral. It got picked up by an Instagram called Subway Creatures, which sort of celebrates the absurdity of the New York City subways. Yes. And then conservative Twitter picked it up and was like, this is the future liberals want, sort of trying to say like, liberals are like...
Like, look out. Right, this is a warning.
This is rotten. But then liberals on Twitter were like, yeah, this is cool. Like, Muslim women, drag queens, and a Ghanaian immigrant were totally down for this.
Right, so everybody could agree this is the future that liberals want.
Right, no one was wrong. Yes. This was the future liberals wanted.
So what was that like for you to be, like, instantly all over the internet?
It was really, well, I sort of moved to New York to get famous, you know, like a lot of us do. Mm-hmm. And so for those 15 minutes when I felt famous, it was really fabulous and also really scary.
Yeah.
I had only been doing drag for like a year. And so I didn't have like a press person. I didn't have a manager. I didn't have an agent. I didn't know what I was doing. It was just like me on my phone, literally from morning till night, fielding emails and texts and Instagram messages and Twitter messages from like the BBC and from like little news, like local news channels, and from Wired and Vice. And it was a really cool 15 minutes. Stressful, but I like enjoyed feeling famous for a brief bit.
I remember I found out, I was like, oh, this guy's from Kentucky. How exciting. And I figured we probably knew some people in common.
Oh, so many people in common.
Because it's Kentucky.
It's a big state, but it's a small world.
Exactly.
Right.
The Louisville and Lexington axis. So we're sitting here in your apartment in Astoria, Queens. It is pouring down rain.
So gross out.
It's a totally awful New York day. But it's cozy in here.
I'm grateful.
And I'm going to learn about you and your life story.
That's what I'm here for.
So let's get started. What's the first thing that you'd like to talk about?
Well, the first object that I gathered are these adorable clip-on earrings that I have. They are about an inch in length, and they are holsters for little tiny plastic pistols. One of them, unfortunately, is missing the pistol. I wore these at a gig, and if you've ever seen me perform, I dance around a lot, I do somersaults, I do crazy things, and the little pistol fell out of the holster and is gone.
Oh.
But these tiny holsters with pistols that clip onto my ears belonged to my Aunt Wayne, who I'm named after. My middle name is Wayne. I was named after her. She was named after her uncle. It's just like a name that flips genders every generation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've never met a man named, or a woman named Wayne.
Right. She's Naomi Wayne Poole, so I'm Samuel Wayne Penn. I have become, in my family, because of my career as a drag queen, the person that everyone gives their jewelry to when they pass on. So my Aunt Wayne, when she died, my family was like, here, have all of her costume jewelry. And it brings me so much joy to wear it when I can. Now, because this pistol's gone, I generally wear her jewelry for pictures and then take it off and replace it with like cheap jewelry before mm-hmm. I go perform because I don't like losing things. Sure. I feel really sad about yeah. that.
She must have been quite a person. Oh, like anybody she's a who wild would put creature. These on, like not ironically, right? Yeah. Tell me about her.
She was my great aunt. So when I was growing up, she was already a woman that you would say of maturity. Mm-hmm. And she lived in San Antonio, Texas. I honestly can't even tell you how old she was when I was growing up because I just sort of never thought of her as an age because we would go to Texas and she would run around with us like she had the energy of a 25-year-old. Wow. She would take us to a million museums and she would take us to the Riviera and she would take us shopping and she would show us around because she was so proud of where she lived. And she would like make margaritas for my family and we would get home at night. They would all play cards and my brother and I would like bug the crap out of them. She was brilliant. She was so funny. And I try now in drag to sort of really channel the women in my family. Mm. And she's a big part of that because she was always gregarious. She was also a little off color. You know, she was never afraid to like say what was on her mind, even if it might like offend somebody. There are some things that she said that now that I'm an adult and know about life, I'm like, okay, Aunt Wayne, you were a little racist, ma'am.
So personally, I have a fantasy of growing up to be an older lady who can say whatever I feel like saying.
Yeah.
You are living that right now.
Fully.
At your age.
I'm 25 and I dress up like a middle-aged woman in really sparkly clothes mm-hmm. and I sing songs and say terrible things on microphone. Not racist things.
Right.
Because I am the future liberals want. I have a duty to my audience to bring a little bit of the political to what I do. But I am a raunchy creature.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you said you say terrible things.
Yeah. I like to look beautiful and do ugly and stupid things on stage. So that like dichotomy is really fun and like keeps the audience entertained. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have some other pieces of hers, you said. Can Absolutely. You tell me about them?
Yeah, a lot of them. And it's so funny because I have my ears pierced, but a lot of her jewelry, because it's costume, is clip-on. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure now if her ears were ever pierced, like now that I think about it. But I have a faux pearl necklace from her that I wear whenever I'm trying to do like a housewife look. Mm-hmm. When I give my little A-line skirt and like a cute bob, I'm like, look at me, I'm cleaning the house. I have these really fabulous clip-on earrings that are gold and they have like little like fake sapphire inlays. They're like sapphire rhinestones, mm-hmm. Which are so beautiful and so glamorous. Oh, I have so many brooches. Yes. So in the winter when I'm wearing my fur coat, I always change out the brooch for every outfit. I have one that's like a really tacky Christmas wreath. So I wear it in December and also in July when it's, you know, Christmas in July. Yeah.
When did you start doing drag?
I started doing drag 2.5 years ago. Well, really, I had dabbled occasionally mm-hmm. before that. The first time I had really gotten into drag was October of 2014. My husband and I went to a Halloween party, mm-hmm. and there's always a costume contest, and I had won many times previously. So I was like, we're going to step our game up this year, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go as Jackie Kennedy, and I had the full Chanel, I mean, it was faux, but I had, like, the full Chanel illusion, like, the pink pillbox hat, the, like, pearls, the skirt. We're going
in November in Dallas.
Oh, look. Yes. Uh-oh. And then I covered myself in blood, and then he dressed up in his suit and his tie, and I did his makeup really pale, and we, like, put, like, a little prosthetic wound on the back of his head, and I, like, bloodied his hair. It was, I told you, I like to do terrible things. And that was my first time in drag. And that's still, now I do a number where I wear that suit and that pillbox hat. I look much more like Jackie O now than I did then because my makeup skills are better. And I will sing Nancy Sinatra's arrangement of Bang Bang and tweak the words a little bit. And then in the middle of the song, reveal that my hands are covered in blood and like slash it all over my face as I'm singing. It's like a number that I have to do at the end of the night because my makeup is ruined. Maybe it's too soon, but I like the shock value of it. And depending on the audience, some people might take it like as a serious performance art piece, but some people just laugh.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with that.
It's definitely like I start as a beautiful woman and then I just like shock the crap out of you.
Hey. Have you always been somebody who likes playing dress up in one way or another?
Absolutely.
Were you the kid putting on your mom's high heels and that kind of thing, or?
Yes, and I got into a lot of trouble for it.
Yeah.
I sort of put it away for a while because it became something. I mean, growing up in Kentucky, I don't think my parents were ever actually homophobic, but I think they were nervous about my tendencies and about the life that it would lead to, because growing up gay in Kentucky, particularly when they grew up, because they were growing up in the 70s and 80s, was like a really difficult time.
Yeah.
And so they wanted the best for me. So they were like, maybe tone it down. Maybe like, don't wear that dress. Like, you know, if you're going to do makeup, please do it in the home and like wash it off immediately.
They wanted your life to be easier.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I remember one of my favorite stories, and my parents were horrified when this happened, but I went to a friend's house. Her name was Evan Kemper. Evan, if you're listening, hi, hello. And I was 12, and she did my makeup for the very first time. And she put me in this like flowy dress she had and in her mom's heels. And her mom thought it was so funny. And she like took pictures of me like dancing in their like backyard. And then I came home and I still had this ridiculous amount of blush on because we were 12. We didn't know how to take makeup off. And my parents were like, what happened to you? And I told them like nothing was wrong. But then like they called Evan's mom, and Evan's mom was like, Evan, we can't do that to Sam anymore. And so I like always loved dressing up.
How do your parents feel about your dress up now?
My mother's extremely proud. She's seen me perform a couple times. And it's funny, I always sort of gauge my performances on whether or not I can make my mother cry. And she stopped crying when I was in college, and I was like, God, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And then when I started doing drag, I came back to Kentucky and gave the speech at Outlaw, which is the University of Kentucky's LGBT Law Center.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother came, and she was in tears at the end. And I was like, okay, I'm on the right path. I'm like doing the right thing now. I think my dad is grateful that I have a job that I enjoy and that pays the bills. And I know he respects my work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure he loves what I do. He's like a macho dude. But he's very respectful of me. And fully supports me and has helped me a lot in terms of like, you know, if I need an extra month, like some extra money because the month was tight, he's willing to send it. Like he's not, you know, he's being a really good parent, whether or not he loves drag.
Yeah. Has your dad seen you perform?
He's never seen me perform. I think he's seen videos on YouTube, but he's never seen me perform live. We'll see. Maybe I'll go back to Kentucky and tempt him to like a brunch or something.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into your second thing.
Amazing. Well, my second thing, it's another piece of jewelry, but this is my wedding ring. Now, there's like a great story behind this. So my husband and I, before we were married, we lived for a time with this couple, Mark and Jeff. I had had a lot of trouble with my apartment in Kentucky in terms of our landlord was like not taking care of it. We were not like in a safe living situation. And so when I was like, I really need to break the lease, Mark and Jeff were like, we have an extra bedroom that we usually use for guests, but why don't you come? You can get out of that apartment and then you can save some extra money so that when you move, you have some coin saved up. And Jeff had had a previous partner named Paul, and Paul died of cancer.
Mm.
So when I told Mark and Jeff that I wanted to get married to Calvin, Jeff said, well, here, these are Paul and I's rings from my first marriage. Why don't you take them? Now, they're not super fancy rings. They're a stainless steel, and they are this sort of woven design where there are two threads that are, like, interlocking and woven around the finger.
It's very elegant.
Yeah, I think it's really elegant, and I think it's a really evocative ring for a wedding ring because it's two things twisted together to become one. Jeff has since passed on. So my husband's now in Kentucky living with Mark, actually. So we're still, like, really close with him. We talked about looking expensive in drag, so I wanted to pull out this dress, which is one of the first things that I've made myself.
Oh, wow.
I'm learning how to sew now. It is, I'm holding it up for Tara right now. Tara?
Tara.
Amazing. I'm terrible at names sometimes. You're good. I was nervous. And it is a, what do you call a bodycon dress?
Yes. Is it stretchy?
It's very stretchy. Mm-hmm. So I can just like throw it over my head and it hugs my curves exactly the right way. And it's long sleeved and it goes down to about my knees and it has a low cut neckline. So if I want to show off my fake breasts, I can. And it's covered in iridescent lipstick kisses.
It's great.
It's like a black dress with like bright red lipstick all over it. And I'm going to talk about it because I've been talking a lot about my family. I've talked about my husband. I've talked about who I sort of call my gay dads, Mark and Jeff, in Kentucky. But this really reminds me of my drag family here in New York City. I've been taking sewing lessons with my friend Pierretta Victory, who's a well-known designer here in New York. They've designed things for Drag Race contestants like Peppermint and Acid Betty, who's also been on Drag Race. So they're like a really big deal. But my friend Honey Davenport and I were like, we need to take sewing lessons because we're poor and we want to look better and it's easier to make your own things if you have the skills. And it's great for me too because I started as a visual artist and I was most interested in character design. I wanted to go into animation as a concept artist. So a lot of what attracts me to drag is the idea of building a visual image in front of the audience. Right. And so now that I can sew and I style my own wigs and do my own makeup, eventually, when I get enough skills, I'm really going to be able to come into my own as like, this is the visual character that I want you to see.
Yeah.
This is the invitation for you to like come in and look at the music that I'm performing and look at the dance that I'm doing and look at the songs that I'm singing. But like, you need the visual first as like, part of what makes Tiffany's so famous is the packaging.
Yeah.
You want to get the box and you enjoy the box as much as opening it and finding the jewelry.
Right.
In it. I want the audience to enjoy what I look like as much as they enjoy what I do.
What's the difference right now between your vision and where you are?
I really have this vision for myself as this very glamorous 50s and 60s showgirl inspired cartoon character. So I sort of want to look like Betty Rubble if she were a real woman, but in like a gown. So right now, because of my skills and because of my budget, I'm wearing like really pretty cocktail dresses with like decent wigs and like cheap jewelry. And I look beautiful, but I don't look as fully glamorous as I want to. You know what I mean? I'm sort of like Rosemary Clooney when she was still like huffing it on the radio, not Rosemary Clooney when she gets to the big time.
Yeah. Tell me how you came up with your drag name.
Oh, goodness. This is a story.
It is the funniest, best. Like, I've been telling people I'm going to interview a drag queen whose stage name is Gilda Webb. It's brilliant.
That means
so,
a lot.
Yeah.
So I told you earlier that a lot of what inspires me is the glamour of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and also cartoons.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm a classically trained opera singer. So one of my favorite things growing up was Looney Tunes. I loved the classical music. I loved the animation. You know, I wanted to go into animation. I loved the beauty of the art, but also the ridiculousness of the comedy that went along. And there's an episode of Looney Tunes called What's Opera Doc? And in it, Bugs Bunny is running from Elmer Fudd, and they're singing along to Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries. And Elmer Fudd sings, "Killed a wabbit, killed a wabbit, killed a wabbit." And I thought, Gilda Wabbit. What a great name. It's like punny, but it also sounds like a name. There's also like an entry point for everyone. Like if you know the Looney Tunes episode, you're like, oh, I get it right away.
Yeah.
But if you don't and you see me like this tall, glamorous redhead, you think like Gilda, the Rita Hayworth movie from the 50s. Yeah. Or you might think Gilda Radner because I have a really raunchy sense of humor and she had like a really like absurd raunchy sense of humor.
Is Jessica Rabbit in there somewhere?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I really want to be, my ideal is to be this like glamorous, beautiful cartoon lounge singer. So Jessica Rabbit is exactly the fantasy that I want to live.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it strikes me that you're really lucky in a lot of ways to be doing what you're doing because you get to choose exactly who you are.
Yeah.
For the world.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I'm getting chills thinking about it. I sort of moved to New York to become myself. I felt a little trapped by the expectations of everyone I knew in Kentucky. Expectations of my family, expectations of my music teachers, expectations of my friends. And I moved to New York to sort of get a tabula rasa, like fresh slate. Let me learn who I actually am. I moved here when I was 23, 23, mm-hmm. I think. I'm almost 26. So yeah, I moved here when I was 23. I needed a place to become myself. And drag really became that for me, which sounds funny because I'm becoming a different person on stage. But through finding out what I wanted Gilda to be, I also found out who Sam actually was.
Go on to your fourth thing.
Yes. So these are my tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
So I have discovered that I really enjoy reading palms and tarot for people, which is an interesting practice because some people are really skeptical of it. There's obviously no science behind it.
Yeah.
But what I have learned, especially in terms of my goals of creating empathy and understanding in the world, is that when I get someone alone with me and my tarot cards and I'm in drag, I often read in drag, that they will open up to me about their life in a way that they wouldn't regular people. Yeah. And so we can have this conversation where they're sort of sharing with a stranger their anxieties and their fears and their hopes and their dreams. And I can, you know, not give them advice, but I can tell them based on what my cards say about what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. And like, if they need advice, we can like pull an extra card for that and say, maybe take this direction. But my favorite thing about this is I started reading tarot about a year and a half ago.
Mm.
And so at my wedding in October, I was talking about it with a friend of mine, and my aunt Susie, who is one of my dad's sisters, came up to me and she was like, "You read tarot cards?" And I was like, "I do." And she was like, "So do I." And so we discovered this whole new thing that we could relate on.
Oh, wow.
And she actually bought me this deck.
It's very pretty. The back is
beautiful.
Really gorgeous.
This is called the Rider-Waite Universal Tarot Deck, mm-hmm. which is, I like to read it because the pictures are so evocative that you mm-hmm. can really, what you do with tarot is you like do a reading for someone and then you interpret the pictures based on how the pictures relate to each other, and then based mm-hmm. on whatever information the person divulges to you in, over the course of the reading. So she bought me this deck, and I find it really beautiful, and it's really clear. It's nice to people who I read for, but when I read for myself, it's really sassy with me.
Oh,
it likes
really?
To, it likes to, like, you know, be like, "Listen, you asked for this. You're fucking getting it." You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's very sassy. But it brings me a lot of joy, and I'm grateful that we can connect on that level as family members. She's also a gay person in my family. There's a lot of lesbians in my family.
Uh-huh.
When I came out, suddenly everyone was like, "Oh, they're not my roommate. They're my girlfriend." and she was one of them. And it was great because she's my godmother.
How old were you when you came out?
I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the fact that I lived in Kentucky, based on the fact that I was raised in a conservative Christian household, based on the fact that I knew my parents were Republicans, I had this vision in my head of how terribly things would go.
Yeah. What did you think might
happen
when
I came out? I mean, I thought that I would be shunned in my church family. I didn't think they would kick me out. They weren't those kind of people. But I thought that they would really want to make me straight.
They would want you to be different.
Right. Mm-hmm. And for a while, we had that conversation. Now, it wasn't an impetus for my parents. They weren't like, "You need to be straight." But for a while, because I was in a Christian church and I was in a Christian household, I went through a journey where I was like, "Okay, I'm going to try to be straight," which did not end well for me. It was sort of a reaction to coming out and also a reaction to breaking up with my first boyfriend. So I was like, maybe this is like God signed me that I shouldn't be gay because like this relationship went so horribly. Mm-hmm. I was in a really dark place because that first boyfriend had sort of mentally abused me because when you're queer and under the radar, you sort of accept the affection that you get. So I came out after getting out of a mentally abusive relationship. I came out and went to college almost shortly after and was surrounded by people who were also conservative Christians and were concerned about my sexuality not being the best thing for me.
Mm.
And so I was in this place where I felt like, okay, the signs point to you need to try being straight. I put myself in a place where I was really close to harming myself.
Mm.
And realized that that was why, was because I was trying to accomplish this goal that was impossible. I stopped doing that my freshman year of college. went on a 2-year journey where I studied Hebrew, Aramaic, and the Old Testament to like talk about being gay in the church. And then since then, it's been a journey about rebuilding my self-confidence, rebuilding my ability to love myself, and rebuilding my ability to like accept exactly who I am. And drag has really been a huge part of that. So this is a coffee mug. I'm a coffee mug collector, specifically of ceramics. It's an orange, like an orangey rust covered mug. We call this stonework. It's not like super smooth. It like is fired to have like a stone like finish. And there's a glaze on the rim, like dripping down in a dark brown. And now that I'm describing it, I feel like I'm making it sound kind of ugly, but I find it really beautiful. But my grandfather and grandmother on my dad's side of the family were artists. My grandmother worked in graphic design and advertising. My grandfather was a woodworker, and they both did ceramics as a hobby. And he collected and made ceramic mugs. And he would usually make the mug, and then my grandmother would paint it. And so I have made a couple mugs, and I started collecting mugs because when they passed away, I was given part of their mug collection. But I find ceramics really beautiful. For my electives in college, I studied the history of ceramics in East Asia, because I was just like interested in them. And I was like, this is a cool art elective that I can take. There's a tradition in ceramics where when something breaks, you don't throw it away. You, put it back together with gold. So you make it even more beautiful through the breaking. And I think that's a really cool, it's a really cool metaphor for how life works. Like, we might struggle and we might feel broken for a time, but afterwards, if we push through and we allow ourselves to heal, we can often be more beautiful for it. And I think that's what really happened whenever I've lost anyone in my life, is that like, I've obviously been really upset, and both my grandparents on that side of the family are passed on. But through that pain, I have come to a place now where I get to celebrate and honor them. And I think that makes me a more beautiful and whole human being, because in my daily life I try really hard to honor their memories and do what they taught me to do when I was growing up, you know?
All right, so I've got one last question for you before we wrap up. In the process of putting together these five things, choosing them, was there anything that you learned?
I think I learned, and it's something that I've really been thinking about a lot over the past year, is that it's clear to me that like family is extremely important to me. I'm very lucky to have such a solid relationship with my family while being a visibly queer person and a drag queen coming from the background that I did. But I think every day my family influences me and who I am. And whether or not he's excited about it, my dad is the reason, you know what I mean, that I'm the person that I am. My mom is the reason that I'm the person that I am. My family is huge and they're always looming in my heart. So when I was picking these objects, I was like, all of these stories are related to family members, whether biological or chosen. This is the story of the people who raised me. And I'm really grateful to get to share that today.
It's been a few months since Sam and I recorded this interview, and I had seen online that there had been some big changes in his life. So I asked him to come into the studio and give us an update.
You got the exclusive when I said, you know, I think I might be coming back to Kentucky. And my husband was working for the Amy McGrath campaign for Congress. She won the primary. And so it was like time to come back so I could really help him, especially towards the end of the race, which we just had last night. We're recording this November 7th.
Yep. We're talking the day after Election Day.
Yeah. So it's been wonderful. I was actually very, very nervous about coming back to Kentucky, not because I don't love Kentucky, and not because I don't have, I have a support system here, my family's here, I have a lot of friends here, but working full-time as a drag queen in New York, I thought, can I make this happen in Kentucky? But luckily, they have a night at Play Louisville, which is the one of the gay bars down here that's called Hot Mess Wednesdays, which is an open stage show And so I went, but I happened to go on a night that was auditions for a regular Wednesday cast.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they have a couple girls who are regulars, and then they have an open stage for people who want to come and perform.
Okay.
And I did not know I was going to the audition. I just thought I was going to the open stage. And I walked in, and they were like, welcome to the auditions. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm here. And I auditioned, and I got hired on Wednesdays. And they were like, you're really great. Do you want to audition for a full-time position here, like for the weekend shows? And I said, sure. I like talked to my people in New York, and I said, this is a possibility, and I'm going to go audition. And that went really well. And so now I'm what you call a playmate at Play Louisville, which is full-time.
And how many shows a week is that?
That's three shows for all the playmates. We're all on slightly different schedules, so I'm Wednesday, Friday, Saturday.
Does this full-time gig come with, like, benefits?
I am not privy to benefits yet. Okay. I'm new. I think that some come in the future. But I do officially have tax paperwork now, which is very comfy because I'm not very good at paperwork. So now I have less work to do come tax time, yeah. Which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah, rather than from a bunch of different places.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like running around with a 1099 being like, please help me. I don't know what I'm doing.
There's a new character, the drag queen who's incompetent at paperwork.
Absolutely. It's very easy for me to play because that's just who I am.
So what's it been like to be closer to your family?
It's been wonderful. My brother and his wife had a child in February, so I've gotten to see my niece a lot, which is really cool. And like less of a good note, my great-grandmother passed away last week, but it was really good to be here when that happened. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's been really interesting being close to my family politically in this very charged time around elections. Mm-hmm. I had lots of conversations with people who don't agree with me. But that's sort of the point of me mm-hmm. being here. I feel like it is important for queer people, when they can, when they feel able, to come back to places like Kentucky and to be involved in their communities. And that means being involved with people who don't agree with you. Because if you really believe that something is right, the only way to make that change happen is to educate people, to be involved. And I know I'm the only drag queen my dad knows. I think I might be the only gay person he sees regularly.
And when we talked back in May, you were telling me that your dad had never seen you perform live.
No, and that has changed. I did a brunch show at a restaurant in Louisville called Le Mou, and it was my dad's first drag show. And he loved it. He had a really good time. There's a picture of another drag queen named Layla McQueen with her hands on his shoulders. He's like looking up with his like mouth wide open and a big smile. So he had a really good time. And I actually think that's super important, is like for him to understand me, he needed to come and see the show.
How has being back home in Kentucky affected your relationship with your husband?
Oh my God, it's been fabulous. We both work very challenging jobs. With strange hours. He works, like, especially leading up to the election, was just working all day and all night.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to just, like, come home and, like, be with each other, you know what I mean, is so rewarding. It's so fulfilling. And, like, that's why we got married. It's, like, that's the kind of relationship we have. And I feel like it's been really important for him, for me to be home. You mm-hmm. know, it's helped him stay calm and be able to do the best work that he can. And his presence certainly helps me. I was not necessarily happy when I was in New York. I like to call myself a cheerful person.
Mm-hmm.
So like even when bad things are happening, you can like keep a smile on your face. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I was like really happy at my core. And being close to him while still being able to do the work that I want to do is such a beautiful thing for me. I think this move was important. I felt like I had a duty to come back to Kentucky, especially in this divisive time. I feel like queer people need other queer people around them, you know? If all of us move to the coasts, then what happens here?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a queer person working in nightlife. There's a lot of liberals around me. And I had a lot of friends who have said, like, oh, Texas is trash. Like, oh, Florida's awful. I hope it sinks into the ocean. And I've had a lot of people ask me, like, do you want to move away now? Because my husband was working for Amy McGrath and she lost, and like the governorship is coming up. You know, the way that Kentucky's going, we don't think it's going to be a liberal governor. Like, and I said, absolutely not. Because if we move away, we let down the other queer people, the other people of color, the other women, the other working class citizens who live here. We let them down because we take away that power. Amy McGrath lost by 2%. It was like 48%, well, I guess like 3%, 48% to 51% or whatever, however the
math
works.
It was very close.
Very, very close. Mm-hmm. And if we move away, that percentage lessens for the next Democrat who runs.
Has there been anything else that surprised you about moving back to Kentucky, something you didn't expect?
I did not expect to be embraced by this community as quickly as I was. I, you know, was really privileged to get the job at Play so quickly. And every time I do a show, people come up to me and they're like, oh, my gosh, you're so amazing. We really enjoyed you. And I get messages on Facebook the next day that are like, we didn't say hi because you were running around, but like we really enjoyed the show. And like I wanted to be able to invest in the community. And because of their interest in me, I'm getting that platform really quickly. And that's a privilege. And I'm really grateful that the work that I do goes over so well.
Well, all sorts of exciting things happening.
So many things.
Thank you for coming back in.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Samuel Penn / Gilda Wabbit for being my guest today. You can catch Gilda at Play Louisville or check her website at gildawabbit.com for her schedule. Today's show was produced, edited, and mixed by me with editing oversight from Erica Peterson. Our theme music is by Alex Wright. You can get more information on our show at wfpl.org and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.